Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Who leads? Who follows? This is often asked about the U.S.-Israel relationship. Do American administrations fight Israel's wars? Is the Israeli lobby all-powerful? And lastly, is Israel truly an American geopolitical asset? Crosstalking U.S.-Israel relations, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Scheuer in Virginia. He's a former head of the Bin Laden issue station at the CIA. In Bristol, we have David Miller. He is a former professor of sociology at Bristol University. And in Rome, we cross to Marco Cornelis. He is a former Italian diplomat, as well as Middle East advisor of prime ministers. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Michael, let me go to you first. I mean, it's been debated for a long time. And but particularly since the events of October 7th with the current genocide that is being committed against the Palestinians, who leads and who follows in this relationship? The title of the program, after all, is called Who is the Alpha? Because there's a lot of countervailing evidence going in both directions. Your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, I don't think there should be much doubt about who runs the United States in terms of foreign policy and in terms of endless funding. It's the Israelis, and the proof of that is so abundantly clear that it's hard to imagine anyone believes that it's us behind them. Nothing that they want, I think, is necessary to the United States. They own the Congress, and they're proud of it. They announced that they can get the Congress to jump through hoops. And most of all, if you pointed toward any particular issue in the Middle East in the last 30 years or more, what could possibly have happened that was in our favor and would benefit the United States? I think the answer is zero. Then you can go into the whole IPAC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, what's the other one? ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. They were the hired guns for Biden's Department of Justice to find out about those nasty Catholics who don't want abortion, or to find out about people who don't like the Democrats. This is something that needs to be cleaned up, not to be examined any longer. In a sense, we've talked about it. I'll give you an example just very quickly. When I was a young boy, 8th, 9th, 10th grade, every year some Jewish organization would come in and show us a movie of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
There's no other entity on this earth that gets access to our children until the fools we have in power now. To me, it's just beyond the pale to think that this is somehow a relationship in which the United States holds the whip hand. That's clearly not the case.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for Netflix to come out with the Nakba series, but I will just keep waiting. No, I think there have been 200 Holocaust films made since the 1980s. I came across that figure yesterday. David, the same question to you. I'm not going to debate and argue with Michael here, but you know, just yesterday, the New York Times reported that Trump has decided not to attack Iran, which of course has been on top of Bibi Netanyahu's list for the past 30 years. How do you see this here? Because there's a confluence of interests. And the U.S. wants to maintain hegemony in the Middle East and deny it to China and Russia. That is obvious. But it's also obvious that the United States is indifferent to genocide. Go ahead, David.
Well, yes. I mean, people say that if you emphasize the power of the Israel lobby or the Zionist movement, that you're letting the U.S. off the hook, and you're saying that the U.S. would not do genocide if it wasn't for the Israelis. Now, of course, that's ridiculous. We've seen what the U.S. has done over the last 50 to 60 years, and everybody knows its record. But of course, what Michael's saying has elements of being correct. I think that it's not just a question of the lobby. I think what's important here is that when you think about the lobby, and you think about the organizations that there are, Michael mentioned some of them, the ADL, for example, or AIPAC, and there are many more, that's not really the key element of Zionist power in the States, it seems to me. It's important. They have power, and they do lots of work, which of course allows them to have influence in Congress and all of the data that we know about in relation to that. But there's something else which allows the Zionists to infiltrate and to have power in the US, and that is the infiltration of the apparatus of governance itself. So that's the Pentagon, that's the State Department, that's the Treasury Department, and of course the White House too. So that's the way in which the Zionists are able to exercise power. And the reason for that is that people say, well, this is the US doing this. Well, the US wouldn't do this unless it was in its own interest. But when you say the US is doing this, what we're saying is that there are people inside these government departments who are actually Zionists, card-carrying Zionists. Some of them, of course, dual citizens, but many more of them just people who believe in the interests of Israel above all. As Pat Buchanan once famously put it, it would be good if there was only dual loyalty. And that of course, is the issue, that there's been a penetration of the US political apparatus. And the same, I'm afraid, is true in Germany and in France and in the UK as well. And that's the way in which the power is exercised, in addition to the power of the Israel lobby. Now, you say the question about Iran. Of course, there will be differences. And we've already seen through the last 18 months of genocide that there have been differences between what the Americans want to do and what the Israelis want to do. And of course, part of what happens then is that the Israelis throw a hissy fit and they have the person who's their interlocutor in the US government, including in Trump's administration, simply removed. We saw that just the other day, didn't we, when they went to speak to Hamas directly, and the person who spoke to Hamas directly said, oh yes, they were, sensible guys, yeah, to deal with them. We can sort this out. And the next day, he was gone.
He was fired.
And that's the way in which the power works. But there will be differences of emphasis, and it may be that Trump doesn't want to attack Iran just yet, and the Israelis won't like that.
Well, Marco, I think David just said it, just yet, okay? Because Israel has gotten the wars that it's wanted in the Middle East for the last 30 years. Is it so easy to say who leads and who follows, or is there a confluence of interests?
Well, it's difficult to challenge what Michael and David just said. I would say that is a sort of tango. Someone one leads, sometimes the other. I mean, it's depend from a confluence of circumstances, as you said before. In the past, it was more related to the color of the American administration, Republicans, Democrats. There were different nuances, sometimes very relevant. Now this nuance disappeared. So basically is a big blob that is taking part on both sides of the American establishment. But I would frame the issue no in the way which is the country who leads who, but in a way I would say which is the establishment that is more influenced by the other. And to this question, I say, until the United States is the establishment we know as it is now, even if now is openly challenged by the president, at least is challenged on certain issue, not yet on the Israel file, we are going to have that the upper hand is in the Israeli hand, because they are smarter. They are there, they have an agenda, and the American agenda sometimes changes with the administration. The Israelis, even if in the last 20 years, basically we have always seen the same Israelis in charge, with due difference. There's no more difference today. So from their point of view, the capability to influence the American establishment has been quite facilitated. As to the article you just mentioned of the New York Times, I have the sense that the more in the issue of who leads who, we should frame it in the forthcoming negotiations. Sometimes this kind of article are leaked deliberately by some people that is going towards a negotiation in order to send some signal, very strong signal, to the Iranians in this case, and to say, hey, we are going to negotiate, but listen, look at us. Last week, we rejected an Israeli attempt to bomb you. Maybe next time we'll not be able to do it.
Well, what you're saying, Marco, is that, you know, it's a matter of timing when such a thing is going to happen. I mean, we have this bluster coming out of the White House. It may be just part of Trump's madman theory of negotiating. It's very hard to say. Michael, let me go back to you. I mean, some interesting polls here. Pew came out with a poll. 53% of all adults have a negative view of Israel. This is including GOP voters. This is part even Trump voters. It's really quite extraordinary. We also had a Gallup poll saying more or less the same thing. So it's not an outlier here. But at the same time, you have standing ovation. I think Netanyahu spoke for 58 minutes and he got 56 standing ovations. Michael.
Yeah, well, I think it goes to show that, I misspoke or didn't speak enough. I entirely agree with the idea that the entire, at least the defense and intelligence community and the Treasury are completely infiltrated, as the gentleman said, by the Israelis. It's a situation where we are, you know, Washington was very concerned, our first president, that someday that the basic greed of Americans would overthrow the country because they can't resist becoming more rich than they are. And I think that's a big weakness for the United States. The other weakness we have, we share with Europe, is that we've pampered, coddled, and cried for the Israelis whenever they demanded it since World War II. If, you know, if there's a country in the world that can be described, or a government in the world that can be described as a government of punks, it's the Israeli government. We sit here and watch them kill innocents. We kill, and we do the same thing. The point we made very well.
Michael, I have to go to a hard break. I'll come back to you when we return from our break. Gentlemen, after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on U.S.-Israel relations. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the U.S.-Israel relationship. Okay, Michael, I want to go back to you. I hate interrupting people when they're making a point, but when I have a hard break, I have a hard break. So continue, please.
Yeah, all I was trying to say is that there is no reason in this at this date and time for anyone to give the Israelis a break because of the Holocaust. And it's no longer something you should hold over everybody's head if they dare to question the illegal activities of the Israelis in our government and other places. The time is over for that. Primarily because, not because of the elapse of time, but because the Israelis have shown they have no more respect for life than the advocates of the Holocaust. They haven't been able to do it in such numbers, but they would if they could.
Michael, they're not bashful about doing it either. At least the perpetrators of the Holocaust tried to hide it. What we see on social media is gleeful, egregious death right in front of our eyes at the touch of a phone. It's really quite extraordinary. David, you know a lot about this. One of the most disturbing, you know, I can't speak about the UK or maybe Europeans, how much they're aware of foreign affairs and what is done in their name. But Americans are just not very well informed. And I think that's by design. You know, we had Pete Hegseth on Fox News talking about Iran and the bomb. But the presenter, she couldn't ask the question, well, what about Israel's bomb? See, you can't say that in broadcast TV. It just can't, okay? She probably doesn't even know it, okay? But, you know, what I came from academia. I remember all of the taboos. I knew how you would get into trouble. This was one of them, but not to the degree that it is today. David.
Well, it is a taboo. I mean, I think maybe you could take a thought experiment. You know, when we talk about the Israel lobby and about the Zionist movement and its influence in the US, we don't think about it the other way. We don't think about, you know, in the UK lobby in Israel or the US lobby in Israel? Who are the US lobbyists making sure that the proxy which Israel is supposed to be for US imperialism is carrying out US interests? Well, when you start to ask that question, it already becomes ridiculous. I mean, the only real way in which the US lobbies in Israel is through covert funding for some of the pressure groups who have been protesting against Netanyahu, which was done under Biden. And that, of course, there's some money went into some of that stuff, but that's the only real US lobby that there is in Israel. There's no attempt to actually influence the body politic of the so-called state of Israel. Whereas, of course, we know through the Foreign Agents Act, the Registration Act, through the Lobbying Disclosure Acts at the federal level in the US, we know that there are millions and millions of dollars spent by direct lobbyists for Israel and, of course, by their proxies, by the Zionist movement groups throughout the country. So when you start to ask that comparison, what is the role of the UK in influencing Israeli government policy? Well, it's nil. It's less than nil. What is the role of the Israelis in influencing UK government policy? Well, it's very, very significant. The UK, for example, is flying more than half of all surveillance flights over Gaza and Lebanon and the rest of Palestine. So they're doing more surveillance flights for Israel than the Israelis are doing for themselves. Now, that's not the influence of the UK on Israel. It's just the opposite way around. So I think that's the key question. Why is it that after all these years, to 200 Holocaust movies, etc., that we're still deferring on almost everything to the interests of the Zionists? It's just incredible. And of course, what people don't see is that not only are the Israelis showing that they are gleeful, as you said, about death, destruction, rape, torture, and the horrors of snipers deliberately shooting three-year-olds in the head on a mass basis. It's not only that we've come to know that that's what they're doing, but people don't have any real conception that they are planning what they call a greater Israel. And of course, that includes Egypt and includes Lebanon and Iraq and Syria and part of Turkey, if they could have it. But there's no conception that that's what's happening here. And I think what we see, you know, in terms of geopolitics, is we see that Israel is trying to make itself a regional hegemon in West Asia or the Middle East.
With American, see, this is the confluence issue that I tried to bring up earlier. And the Americans don't have a problem with that, okay? And because they don't have a problem with that, they don't have a problem with ethnic cleansing and genocide, because in a broad sense, it is serving American interests in the region. How they make the sausage, it doesn't bother presidents of the United States, which is very shameful. Marco, I mean, one of the other things that's interesting to me, it's kind of a form of Western Orientalism. I mean, these people that settled modern state Israel, they're from Eastern Europe. They're white people. They're Europeans. And they have a colonial experiment. The West sees themselves in them.
Well, it's quite incredible in a way that to see that what were supposed the Jews coming from Eastern Europe, the one that were under the more strict rules and the more, in a way, more rust during the period of the Cold War, came to Israel and became the most ardent supporter of Zionism. And this is something that not only from Eastern Europe, but also from Russia, because there were millions and millions of Jews coming from Russia that today are among the ones who not only are, let me say
they're in the West Bank. They're in the West Bank, yes.
Yeah, but they have a capability to influence not only the former countries where they coming from, the United States, etc., but they were able to influence also what are the leadership in Eastern Europe today, and to a certain extent, also the leadership in Russia today. Because I've always watched that in terms of Palestinian issue, Russia was also very clear about the rights of the Palestinians to self-determination, to see their rights recognized. But at the same time, I always watch also Russia very, very careful not to alienate Israel on certain other issues. For example, Syria, where we have been watching that Israel could bomb Syria very, very easily, bombing Russia's allies in Syria, And I didn't see one single finger lift from Russia in order to say to the Israeli, you have to stop to bomb our allies in Syria. So it's not only the capability they have to influence the United States. And in the case of the United States, they had to make at least 40 years ago a big change, because we should consider the Israeli influence in the United States before the Pollard affair. I'm sorry to step in what is Michael environment, but until the Pollard case, the Israeli had a very good arrangement in terms of intelligence at the technical level. When the Pollard affair exploded in 1985, if I'm not wrong, Israel had to change completely his way to influence the American system. It was not enough to influence at the technical level, the government level, the agency. They had to go up, because for a long time, I know from certain reliable sources, but Michael can tell me that I'm wrong, that at the level of intelligence in the United States, there was a big reluctance to cooperate again with Israel, considering the betrayal they suffered.
Speaking of betrayal.
So they had to go in the political level, and they started to do what they do in Congress in a far more effective way, in order to make that is the political level that is going to tell to intelligence level what they should tolerate and do with Israel.
Yes, well, they've done a very good job, the lobby of infiltrating Congress. Actually, if you go to the gray zone, there is a recording of officials bragging about how they have Congress in their pocket. Michael, there are points in the U.S.-Israel relationship that powers that be do not want to talk about, the USS Liberty, for example.
Peter, we just had the gentleman on, Mr. Turney, to talk about that on our podcast, and it was an extraordinarily gory, terrible situation. Three different waves of attacks on that ship, and the president himself, Lyndon Johnson, stopped the aircraft carriers from sending help to the Liberty. It almost sank. But it's very, very typical. And the gentleman just talked about intelligence. The intelligence community is as much controlled by the Israelis as are the political side, whether it's Treasury, the State Department, or anything else. We move in sync with what the Israelis want. And I hope it's not the case that anyone in the United States thinks that the Israelis can provide some kind of a block against the Russians and the Chinese. They're there, we're not. And we don't have the capability to do it ourselves. And the Israelis, sooner or later, are going to take it in the chops just because of what they've done over the past 70 years. It's a very, very difficult situation. No one wants to see him disappear, but I mean, Israel has cost the world an enormous amount of blood.
Well, and money. I mean, but not only that, but David, all of us, by talking about it and those that are aware of it, all of us are culpable to one degree or another, because we are aware of it, we talk about it, and I think that there should be more pushback, because this genocide that is being committed, the West is culpable because it's not stopping it.
You're exactly right. And I think what you really have to do is look to the media.
Yes.
You have to have a media that reports the truth and not what they think that will please their payers, their funders.
Yeah. I mean, I think the West is more than culpable. I mean, the West is actually directly involved in the genocide. The Americans provide some 70-odd% of the weaponry. The Germans about 29%. Most of the intelligence support is being given by the UK. So these are directly involved. All of the Arab states who are complicit are also involved. The Qataris are involved, the Saudis, the UAE, and others as well. So there's a lot of complicity. And it's not just that they're not doing anything to stop it. They're actually deliberately fostering and helping to carry out the genocide. But when you say pushback, look, there's been lots of pushback by public opinion, but that's never going to make any difference. Because
well, I mean, on that very sore point here, a former president said elections have consequences, and I had kind of hoped that would be true in the last election cycle, but elections apparently don't, okay? You can vote against war. You can vote against foreign interventions, but it doesn't happen. Unfortunately, gentlemen, we've run out of time. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Virginia, Bristol, and in Rome. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.